From the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Gemma Gaudet. More Idaho Matters right now. Over the last few decades, urban beekeeping has been on the rise, with beehives popping up in cities and backyards all across the U.S. And while this hobby can be fun, it also plays an important role in supporting local food and ecosystems. So joining us today to talk more about beekeeping is Mark Van Hoon, the Chief Technical Officer for the Treasure Valley Beekeepers Club. Mark, it's nice to have you on the program.
Hi, Gemma. Good to be here.
So, Mark, how did you get involved in beekeeping?
I went to a class, a continuing education class, and both my wife and I were kind of taken with it. And so I got my first hive, and that kind of blossomed. And at one point, I was responsible for over 25 hives, but I'm back down to just four now.
Just four, right?
Just four.
So talk to us a little bit about the lives of bees and how all of that works.
Well, let's talk about middle of winter, just after the equinox in the middle of winter. And The queen starts laying at that point, and with a very small cluster, she grows the hive. And then in the spring, when the nectar flow comes on, she adds to that greatly. And then what they're trying to do at this point is swarm, so that they basically perpetuate the hive elsewhere. And after swarm, she leaves behind a couple of queen cells that hatch into a new queen, and kind of the whole process starts over again for the old hive. And the new queen hopefully finds a new place to set up shop, and then they start a second hive.
So, Mark, this might seem like a really simple question, but why are bees so incredibly important, especially when it comes to our food system?
Well, approximately a third of all of our fruit and veggies come from pollinated plants that the bees are pollinating, and that equals about $15 billion in dollars. So that's kind of the hard numbers. But I think Einstein basically said it best, and he says, if the bee disappeared off the surface of the globe, then man would have only 4 years of life left. So we are at the top of the food chain, but we are completely dependent upon the very bottom of the food chain.
So over the years, we've heard quite a bit about the decline in bee populations. And as you just quoted Mark Twain, that is not a good thing. So is this still an issue and a concern?
Yeah, it's actually a big concern. The thing I have to kind of bring up here is that the honeybee gets all of the glory and the spotlight. It is the bee that we have corralled and are using it for our benefit. But there's over 4,000 other bees in the United States that are doing their job as well. The honeybee is not as big a concern simply because we have the ability to graft and make new queens and raise hives, which we are having to do in ever-increasing numbers. This last year was the second worst year on record for hive loss. We lost 48% of the hives in the United States, which basically represents 1.4 million hives. And so what had to happen is an all-hands-on-deck effort to raise new queens and then start propagating new hives. So this last year in particular was tough. We were not able to get our bees and our replacement bees and hives until about a month later than normal.
So as you mentioned, the honeybees get all the glory, but do we need to be concerned about the decline of other bees as well?
Actually, we need to be more concerned about the decline of the other bees because we aren't out there trying to increase their populations the way we are with the honeybees. So they are being affected by many of the same things that are causing the decline in the honeybee population, but there's nobody looking out for them.
So let's talk about some of the factors that are contributing to the decline. Can you tell us what those are?
Most of them human caused. So you basically have, you've got diseases, which we've introduced many of. You've got parasites, one in particular called the Varroa destructor, which is a tiny mite that we imported from Asia in the 90s through bringing in bees from Asia. And that little mite by itself has just decimated many hives. And that is the main problem we have now raising bees, is trying to control that mite. On top of that, we've got monocultures, so fields and hundreds of acres of just a single crop, which is not healthy for the bees' diet. We've also got, I'm seeing more and more articles that are saying climate change is having a big effect on bees. And just from a personal standpoint, this last year was really tough, just because of what I'll call the wonky weather early in the spring, where we went from warm days to freezing days, and then back to warm days, and then flip back to freezing days. And that set a lot of the hives in the valley here back quite a ways. So I was getting messages or emails from people asking what's happened to the honeybees, because I'm just not seeing them the way I'm used to seeing them every year at this time.
So, Mark, how can people help out local pollinators? I mean, what can the average person do to, you know, to help ensure the survival of bees?
Okay. The number one thing is, don't call an exterminator if you see a swarm of bees. Bees are your friends, not your enemies. It's kind of a scary thing. We're kind of raised in this country to fear bees, but you really don't need to. They aren't out there to sting you. Don't do broadcast spraying of pesticides and herbicides. If anything, you can do some spot spraying, and you try to do it in the very early morning, and you don't want to hit plants that the bees might be visiting. You can plant pollinator-friendly plants. One of the ways I like to find them is to go to an outdoor nursery and just follow whichever plants have the most bees on them. But you want to make sure that the plants you get are not treated with any kind of a pesticide. We have a lot of synthetic pesticides now that are actually sprayed on the plants to proactively protect against pests. You can supply water. Dripping hose even works. And I'm going to have to say probably the last one is to buy local honey and support your local beekeepers.
Okay. So can you talk a little bit about swarms, because we noticed on your page, on your website page, the Treasure Valley Beekeepers Club, you have a lot of info about swarms. So can you explain first, you know, what that swarm is, and then how you help to remove them? Because we always get the swarm of bees, and I mean, we call them hornets. I don't know if they are or not, but always like on my kid's basketball hoop every single year, every year.
Ah, okay. Well, let's see. As I was saying, basically, like all life, the bees are trying to propagate. And the way they do that is to go and make a second hive. But the queen, while she is active in the hive, she's basically laying her weight in eggs every day. And she's large, and she's not really able to fly very far. So as the hive builds up in the early spring and the pollen comes on, and that's kind of the indicator to the queen, is that she is seeing enough pollen that she knows that there's going to be food for them. She starts building up the population of the hive to far more than the hive can sustain. And then on a nice warm day, and that during this time, the bees have stopped feeding her. So she's kind of slimming down and getting into, I'll call it, flying shape. And then on a warm day, they will all take off. And I shouldn't say they, the queen and half the hive, usually the foragers, the ones that have been out and already know the terrain, they will fly off, and they need to kind of regroup, because the queen at this point hasn't been flying for over a year, and she needs to kind of get her muscles going again. So they will typically congregate within about 100 yards maximum of where the hive was. And we don't really understand why they choose a particular branch or a particular basketball hoop.
Yeah.
but I can tell you that year after year, they will go to the same place, which is kind of nice. I know in my backyard exactly where to look when I have a swarm. Uh-huh. So from the swarm, which can last anywhere from 1 to 3 days, they will send out scout bees to go find a new place for a hive. And then with some signal that we aren't quite sure about, they all take off from the swarm and go to where they they want to build the hive. And hopefully it's not in, you know, the car that has the window that was partway down or something like that.
Okay, so before I let you go then, if something like that happens, Mark, like there's a swarm or maybe even a hive, right? Because that's, we really do get, and I'm sure other people can relate to this, we do get a hive every single late spring and summer, like kind of on the base of our my kids' basketball hoop outside. What right. should you do?
If you go to the Treasure Valley Bee Club website, which is idabees.org, or if you basically put in Idaho bees in a Google search, it'll come up to our webpage. The first thing you're going to have on the landing page is a big red button for swarm. And what we've done is gotten members of the Treasure Valley Club that are versed in capturing swarms. We've made a list by zip code. And so you will eventually get down to your zip code and it'll give you numbers to call. You call and one of these people will come out. There's no charge for the fee or anything. And we try to educate people as we're doing this. And they will come out. And the secret to catching a swarm is that you've got to get the queen. So we typically will put them into, we'll bounce them into a bucket or shake them off the branch and put them into a hive, depending upon how big the swarm is. It could be one or multiple boxes. And as long as you've got the queen, the rest of the bees will all follow her into that hive. And then come evening, after all the foragers and the scout bees are back into the hive, we'll pick it up and you won't see it anymore.
Huh. Okay. So, I mean, it really does come down to education for the Treasure Valley Beekeepers Club. Is I mean, probably one of the worst things we can do then is to kill a bee. It really like call you because what I'm hearing from you, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is that if we call you, the Beekeepers Club, and say, okay, we've got these bees, you'll come, you'll take care of them, you will protect them, and we're doing our part in sustaining the life of bees, which we so desperately need to be doing.
Yep, that's exactly right. And you really hit on a key point there. The number one mantra of the club is education. And even if you don't want to have bees yourself, just being educated about what they're doing and how to treat them is very important.
Mm-hmm. And if you do want to have them, you have all kinds of information on your website about how to really start becoming your own beekeeper.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff you can read about, but the kind of the secret to being successful in this business today is that you really do need a mentor and you need people that have been doing it for, you know, we've got people in the club that have been doing it for almost 40 years and they can give you all the ins and outs. So my recommendation is that if you want to get into keeping bees, you can come to the Treasure Valley Club meeting, which is the fourth Tuesday of every month. And you can talk to people there. And then in addition, we have three hives up at the Foothills Learning Center at the end of 8th Street. And if you are on the fence or you just want to learn about bees, we use those as training hives. So you can, we've got suits for you and we can get you all protected. And then you can stick your head in the hive with the rest of us and learn what you need to learn about bees.
Well, Mark, thank you so much for coming in. What a great conversation and education as well for all of us. So I really appreciate the conversation.
Hey, you're welcome, Jim, and it's been my pleasure.
Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.